Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
A big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on iTunes and YouTube, Spreaker, Podcast Radio, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, Blueberry, Player FM, Podcast.com, and VIP Internet Radio. And also at CaregiverDave.com, voted the number two best caregiver podcast of 2017. Isn't that nice? We have an exciting interview planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg.
Hello.
Founder of the Caregiver Space. And today, Adrian and I, we will be interviewing each other so that you can learn some more information that you may not have already known, that we may have taken for granted that you know. And we'll be talking shop as well. So why do we do what we do, stuff like that, and so on. And these shows with just the two of us, I think, Adrian, don't you agree that they are some of our best shows?
I agree.
Not taking anything away from the hundreds of guests.
Oh, of course.
Last almost 5 years.
No.
See, we're in agreement.
Yeah.
We don't talk politics. So let's get started. But first, I want to take this moment to thank my last week's guest, business coach Katrina Sawa. And you can watch or listen to those podcasts or videocasts on our website, caregiverdave.com, or any of our many networks I mentioned earlier. All right, enough of that. A big welcome to my guest, Adrian Gruberg. Hello.
Hello.
Adrian. How is New York weather today?
Well, it was in the high 80s, and it was sunny and very humid, and then it started to pour.
Really?
Yeah, at about 2:30. They said it was supposed to start at 12:30, but boy, the sky went black. And
is that unusual for New York this time of year?
Not this time of year, no. Mm.
Well, no, we have
but
sunny.
I was prepared. I was home by then.
Yeah, we have sunny, 85, which is a lot less warmer than we've been having.
I mean, I heard it was like
even yesterday.
I heard it was like 117 someplace.
Depends on where you are. Charlene was up in the 100 area at her aunt's house because I was speaking at Harvard, sharing the stage with George Ross and Caitlyn Jenner, and that was an experience. But that's for another show.
What was the topic?
It was a storytelling expo.
Everyone
was telling stories, and George Ross told some very good stories about Donald Trump. He's a very funny guy and very sharp for 90 years old, I mean.
Yeah.
And told some insights. He likes Trump except when he doesn't, you know.
I mean. Okay.
So they're not in 100% agreement on a lot of things. And Caitlyn Jenner, that was an experience. That was a real learning experience for me. I asked a lot of questions, which I got answers to. And some of the answers only made me think of more questions. And so after the interview, I went on Google and Googled all my questions, and I learned even more. It's just a whole
about Caitlyn Jenner or
about transgenders in general, and what's the difference between a transgender or and a
transvestite or a
cross-dresser. You know, I'm thinking of J. Edgar Hoover here.
Yes.
I asked her. I says, you know, what's the difference between, you know, someone who just cross-dresses, like we were told that the FBI director used to enjoy doing.
Of course.
And Ed Wood used to enjoy doing that B director, you know, back in the 50s. And he says, you know, there are so many different levels of this, and just because you're a cross-dresser doesn't necessarily make you a transgender. And then,
sure.
You know, there are other categories, people who were born with both genitalia, you know, and some people who were born with one or the other, because sometimes they removed the wrong one. You know, they should have removed the male, and instead they removed the female, and the boy
and the
grows up wanting to wear dresses
dominant.
And vice versa. It's so confusing and so interesting. And then sometimes, you know, they're born with one, but their X and their Y chromosomes are all
messed up. They don't identify. You know?
It's very enlightening, very interesting, because these people are tortured. You know, from age 8, he said he knew that he wanted to wear his mother's clothes, and you know, that doesn't happen to a lot of people, just a certain
You'd
amount.
You'd be surprised.
Well, their statistics are 1 out of 2,000 people kind of feel this way, and that sounds like a lot.
Oh, well, I mean, that
sounds like a lot.
That, well,
but maybe, you know, if someone feels this way, they're not going to say anything, because they have learned from an early age. I mean, look at how many years Bruce Jenner just kept it to himself, and he became a celebrity, became the greatest athlete in the world, 3-time gold medal winning decathlete, married into the Kardashian family. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No,
and he gave it all up.
But you could tell something was going on.
But his family knew something,
because
a couple of times
appearance.
He said he got caught, you know, wearing.
Well, there were subtle changes in his appearance as well.
That's true. I think he was doing plastic surgery.
I know I have a friend, a good friend, who has a school, a finishing school for boys who want to be girls. And that's for anyone who either wants to be a cross-dresser all the way to people who actually become transgender and make the change. And a lot of her clients are married couples. And one of the things that she does with married couples is bring the wife in to the experience, so that it doesn't feel like so hidden and forbidden.
Yeah, I remember that scene in Ed Wood. I don't know if you saw the movie, where, you know, his wife left him because she thought he was a freak, and then he met this other girl who liked her, and he just told her, "Listen, I just want to tell you this right up front. I like to wear women's clothing." And she said, "Okay."
So
I was like, "Okay, as long as you're cool with it." And Caitlin said that, you know, she doesn't understand why all this happens, why they feel this way, and she doesn't think she ever will understand
right.
it. And I sure don't understand it. But, you know, it's there. And pretending it's not there isn't going to make it go away. I don't know how we started talking about this.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean,
it is an interesting thing.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you got to do that. You told a story.
I did tell a story. I had a speech already written and prepared, you know, memorized. And then I was hearing some of the other stories, and this one lady's story just emotionally connected, and the whole audience just started crying. And I instantly said to myself, oh, my gosh, my speech is missing the emotional connection that I usually have. And so all of a sudden, this experience that I had 45 years ago came up in my mind, and I hardly ever talk about it. In fact, I never talk about it. I don't even think my wife knew about it. I had a stepbrother briefly in my life, because my father had left my mother after 27 years of marriage and married a woman attorney, and she had a son who I had gone to high school with for 4 years.
God.
Never was really friends with him, but I knew him, and we were, you know, friendly. And now it was awkward, you know? I tell the story, I'll just tell some of it. When the video comes out, I'll post it, and you can all hear it. But
Was it a moth story? There's a program called The Moth, which is a storytelling
No, no.
program.
This was at the Harvard Club of Boston,
Okay.
put on by Clint Arthur.
Okay.
The many events that I've done that he puts on amazing events, and so I was single and I was going sailing because I sailed a lot in those days, and I pulled into my father's gas station because I wanted some free gas and I was on empty, and John was there, and I says. Well, he spoke first. He says, "Hi, Dave, where are you going?" And I says, "Hi, John, I'm going sailing." And I heard a voice in my head immediately. It was this still small voice, maybe the voice of God. And it said, "Invite him to go sailing with you today." But instead, I heard come out of my mouth, "Yeah, you should go sailing with me next week when I go again." And he said, "Yeah, sure, sounds like a date. Bye." So I drove away, went sailing, had a great time, got back home. My father calls me. I says, "Hey, what's up?" And there was silence on the other end of the phone until I heard the words, "John took his life tonight." And I says, "No! I was just with him at the gas station. He seemed happy. We're going sailing next week." No! I felt so guilty because I didn't listen to that voice. And it took me a while to deal with the guilt and to finally, just ask forgiveness from God. But it was harder to ask forgiveness from myself because John might still be alive today. Maybe not, but maybe. So, and I never thought of that ever again. I mean, hardly. Certainly never told any people. It's not a story I'm proud of.
Well,
But I told the story, and
it
everyone
was
was
from your
just,
gut.
So it was a good thing, and I didn't even have to rehearse it. It just, I tried it like 5 or 6 times rehearsing, and it just flowed. I didn't forget any part of it. And I says, "Wow,
Came
this is
spilling out.
destiny." So it was the perfect story because we talked about suicide and the statistics of suicide. AARP and the United Hospital Fund did a study, 1,677 caregivers, and they found that roughly half of them felt down, depressed, and hopeless just 2 weeks prior to the study. I mean, hello, whenever there's depression, we should always ask, is suicide far behind? And there is a higher incidence of suicide among caregivers. And
It's the
so,
only way to escape sometimes, they think.
they're experiencing the same suicidal depression that
Sure.
Anthony Bourdain experienced, and Kate Spade and Robin Williams, Kurt Cobain, and so it's a nice bit of information
Yeah.
for caregivers because even though 30% of them die before their loved ones do from stress, there are many of them who are suicidal, And there, I don't know if you know any caregivers who actually committed
No,
suicide,
I don't.
but I don't either, and you don't hear about them. But according to statistics, they're out there.
I'm
And why
sure.
wouldn't they be? I mean, they're
Right.
stressed out anyway. They're depressed anyway. We knew that. And most, you always got to be careful with depression because, you want to get on some antidepressants because those are the people. I mean, someone who commits suicide has felt depressed. So when someone is depressed, that should be a red flag.
They
And you
also
should take
talk
care.
about suicide being something for some people that's just a reflex, and like something bad happens, let's say in sports, a kid in high school is rejected from a team, and it just feels like the kid's a normal, healthy, kid, not depressed, but the rejection is just too much,
And then bullying too.
and bullying too, and it just seems like the only way out, and one person who tried it, just said at the last minute, I realized this wasn't what I want to do. And that a lot of people, it happened to be somebody who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge
Oh
and
my.
survived.
They
And
survived, huh?
one of the few people that survived that. And he was interviewed and talked about on the way down, he realized, what am I doing?
And I don't talk about this either. In fact, I might have only told two or three people in my life, and now it came to my mind. I'm going to tell the world now that when I was 12 years old, I remember I had a bit of an inferiority complex because, I was I my father was a workaholic. He was always working at the gas station, and my mother, was kind of like an Edith Bunker. She's just kind of in her own little world, in her own little bubble. And, there was no one to instruct me as I was approaching puberty in how to dress and be cool, or how to comb my hair, or how to cut my hair. So I was kind of dorky, And my friends used to make fun of me. And I remember one day, I showed up on my bike to my friend's house, who he was the kind of friend who he was only your friend when other people weren't around, and when his other peers were around, he would turn on you. And that's what happened this day. And everybody was just kind of mocking me and making fun of me. And so I says, I'm out of here. And I went home. And I remember, going to the bathroom, just sitting on the toilet there. My father was watching television, and I couldn't tell him. He wouldn't understand. And I just remember feeling like I wanted to kill myself, 12 years old. And, I didn't know how to do it, or, I just remember wanting to die.
But there you go.
And that's the closest that I've ever been to suicide. But, it probably wouldn't have taken much to, if I was a little more brave, or if I knew my father had a gun in the house or something. I don't know. Maybe. But I'm lucky I didn't.
I
But we need
mean,
to communicate
it's
to people that depression is temporary, and suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
that's true.
It goes away.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, there must be a reason why we were talking about suicide. Maybe somebody needed to hear
Well, you
it.
said that you wanted this show to be a way for people to know things about us that they
That's
didn't
true.
know.
And I
And
just
I
revealed a
and
whole
you
bunch,
just
didn't
guessed.
I? Well, now it's your turn. What are you going to reveal?
Well, I can't really reveal anything. That hasn't been
Your life is an
I
open
mean, I
book.
talked about my friend who has a school for boys who want to be girls, and she's got a PhD in human sexuality. And I do have friends in the sex business, and they're some of the nicest people I've ever met
Yeah.
because they're
And
not hiding
all of those
anything.
people are in probably a higher risk group than caregivers as far as feeling suicidal depression and actually committing suicide, the gay, the transgender, the just all
Well,
of
the
it.
people that feel, yeah, absolutely. But
Because they're
my
bullied, and bullying is a big part of
well,
depression and
my
suicide.
neighborhood, in my neck of the woods,
Which is
Chelsea
okay.
and Flatiron in Manhattan,
It's like Greenwich Village. Are you close to
it's
Greenwich
no,
Village?
Chelsea is a very gay area.
Oh.
I mean,
Well, so is
it's
Greenwich Village, I
become
understand, and
not like, well, the West Village, yes.
right.
But it's these are some of the most generous giving people that I know. I mean, if you
Yeah.
want to talk about caregiving, when
They make good caregivers, right?
they make great caregivers,
Yeah.
it in Angels in America, when the protagonist is diagnosed with AIDS, and it's just coming to the forefront, the person that lives with him, his lover, is taking excellent care of him, but enough time goes by and he leaves, and he leaves because he needs to survive, and it's that's very rare. Most people stayed and lost loved ones like crazy. There was it's a and a lot of good came out of AIDS research and stuff like that for cancer and a lot of viruses. Looking for the solution, the cure.
So it helped the straight community as well.
It has helped the straight community as well because they've stumbled on things. That's like, well, let's try this with a cancer
Well,
patient because it
that's like
seemed to
the
be
space
killing.
program. We learned
It
so
seemed.
much just by going to space.
I mean, my God, the space program. What most people wouldn't know is just how much textiles
Right.
have and athletic things have been affected by the space
Yeah,
program
and
because,
plastics, all these strong plastics, stronger than
right,
steel.
because I mean our lives have changed because of all the things that have been discovered and developed for the space program. And then everybody in Manhattan's walking around in exercise gear that comes from these fabulous materials. So that's just trickle down.
Yes, and that's America, isn't it?
It is America.
Only
It's
in America.
not only. I mean, there are people elsewhere, but it's an interesting concept and something to explore, which
Well, it's a good
is,
time to take a break, so hold that
yes.
thought, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
David Nassani.
Best-selling author Dave Nassani.
Dave Nassani is a best-selling author.
Mr. Dave Nassani.
Thank you. So you're needed.
I am needed.
You are very much needed.
The woman I loved had suffered a massive stroke.
Yes. They tell you in the event of an emergency, oxygen mask will drop. Mm-hmm. Put your mask on first. Before you help your loved one with their mask.
For the next 2 years, our lives had become a living hell.
Everyone has one of these. It's called a cell phone. You turn it on, you punch in your number. Hello, Mom. I need help. Grandma's driving me crazy. I realize there are so many other caregivers out there who are hurting and feeling lost and alone. And I didn't want them to hurt anymore.
So now I host a popular iTunes podcast, The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show.
Yeah.
And I even shared the stage with Suzanne Summers at Harvard.
Come and join our community of caregivers. Let us love on you. Let us support you.
Dave is an amazing man. I was in tears when I heard his story.
Dave is really my idol because he created something for caretakers. And I was a caretaker for my father.
Every caregiver's life is a love story. Let me help you make that love story one of hope and triumph. Thank you very much. And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Dave Nassani. And I got a bunch of questions that we're going to shift gears here.
Okay.
Questions I want to ask you, Adrian. And maybe
Okay.
if you want to ask me other questions, you can. And if you want to ask me
Okay.
the same questions, you can. But what got you first interested in helping other caregivers? Now, I know you became a caregiver, so you were kind of drafted into that. But after your care receiver, you know, left this earth and you were no longer bound by the chains of caregiving, what made you decide that you wanted to, you know, make it your life's mission to help others?
Well, I had the internet wasn't new, but it was difficult to find support programs. I mean, Steve was diagnosed in 2005. And between 2005 and 2007, I had no support network whatsoever. Then I finally was, it wasn't that I was burning out, it was just that I really realized that I needed other people to talk to about this problem. So I went.
Good therapy, huh? Good therapy. It was therapy for you?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
You said I needed someone to talk to about this problem.
I needed other people who were like me.
Okay.
Who were going through what I was going through. Not therapy. I mean.
So was this when your husband was still alive?
Yes. So I went online.
All right.
And at the time, there wasn't very much online. But the American Cancer Society had something, support groups for caregivers. And I joined one. I also found a wonderful site where just cancer patients, you had both the patients and the caregivers just throwing questions back and forth and getting answers. And that helped get me through. Then it was about 2009, I was taking care of both Steve and his mother. At that point, I was taking care of his mother in 2007, which is probably why I needed support, because the added stress to cancer patients, you know, running back and forth to the oncologists and transfusions it was nasty stuff, of course. But In this specific group of all of these people, there was one woman who really I really connected with her, and we became pen pals. We wrote each other every day, which is why I believe journaling and writing is so important. Because the 2 years that we were pen pals, there was amazing stuff that went on. When Steve,
for both of you.
Yeah. And her husband passed just before Steve died. We continued to correspond. And the group that I was in when Steve died, I was only allowed to stay for 6 weeks. After he died, and then they were going to put me in like an after caregiving group and take me away from all of these people that I built a relationship with for like 4 years.
Wow.
And
so you had to like go on your own if you wanted to see each other.
Yeah. So at first the notion was I'm going to start
just a group
for
yourself.
A little thing for the other people in the group so we can all communicate with each other, because a lot of people in the group had lost their husbands in the same period of time and were no longer in the group, and we all wanted to stay in touch. So I took it on to do it. And when I started it, it was like, well, why should it only be for... for the people that were in my group, why can't I do it for everybody that's going through this? And I just went ahead and did it.
Well, and everybody is glad you did. How many would you guess lives that you've touched over the years in some way?
Millions.
Millions. Wow.
I mean, because I can, you know, we through all the data that Corey gets, we know exactly how many hits and forwards and shares and things like that. So people get tweets forwarded to them. And
you're a very special person.
Lori is also a very special person. I give her tons of credit.
One person can change the world one life at a time.
One person can change the world.
People always say, what can I do? I'm just one person. Well, look at what you did.
They can certainly affect. They can be effective. And it may not be the whole world. It's a segment that
your
we chose.
Portion of the world,
and
yeah.
it's a big segment that we chose.
And what if everybody did it?
Caregivers out
this would be a different world.
Yep. So
why
that's
don't
why
people
I
do
did it?
Why don't people think about helping their fellow man, or more people, I should say? A lot of people do.
A lot of people do. A lot of people don't have the time. A lot of people don't even have the time to say thank you and please. I mean, and that
million
drives
excuses.
Me crazy.
Yeah.
you know, when people, it seems so rude to me. I'm very courteous. So I really.
Your mother probably taught you well.
My mother taught me too well, as far as that goes. But.
Well, by the same token, the ones who are rude, you know, they didn't have a good upbringing.
The ones who are rude, some of them don't even realize that they're being rude.
Mm.
And you just have to call it to their attention. You know, like, why didn't you say thank you to that person? That person just helped you. You know, say thank you.
Do you tell that to a stranger? If
yes.
It's like,
I do.
And what's their reaction?
You're right.
Really? So no one's got upset at you until you mind your own business.
I never had anybody be rude to me back.
Well,
like mind your own business or something like that. No, they would just say, no, you're right. And that's changing the world too.
Yeah.
One person at a time. So
my answer to the same question would be, what? How did I get interested in helping others? You know, I went through a 2-year grieving period with my wife,
what?
And it wasn't pretty. And, you know, I had to write her a letter, and I was, I don't know if I was thinking of leaving or I was just threatening to leave, because, you know, sometimes just the threat is enough. But I sat down and I wrote her a letter. I said, Charlene, why are you so mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just trying to take care of you 24/7, and it's not easy being your husband right now, you know, I just don't think I can be with you anymore. I mean, I'll take care of you financially, but I just can't be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, felt good to get it out inside of me and
writing.
On a piece of paper where I could look at it and touch it and feel it.
Right.
And now there was time to, like, give it to her, and I couldn't.
But I understand.
I just couldn't. I just didn't have it in my heart. So I just put it in my filing cabinet, which it's still here.
Yep.
22 years ago. Under letters.
There it is.
And every now and then I pull it out and I read it. And I says, oh my God, I forgot how painful it was. Because we forget about all the painful stuff. You know, like that story about my stepbrother. And we tend to only remember the good things, and we tend to forget the bad things. But it's good to file that stuff. Don't just throw it away. You know, put it in a secret place where no one can see it. It's just you
and the key. I just come upon things that, you know, like old notepads and sketchbooks.
Really?
and things that are 10 years old, and like, wow.
Yeah, it's just as healing going back and reading how far
yes.
you've come. Because, you know, so many times, I mean, I'm a biker, so I go up a lot of hills.
Yes.
And sometimes it's discouraging. I'll look at the top of the hill and I say, oh, my God, I've got so much to. But then I'll turn around and I'll look at how far I've come and I say, wow. You know, and in life, we need to always look at where we came from. You know, you may not be where you want to be. But
right.
at least you're not where you used to be.
Right.
And that is encouraging, and it gives you, because it doesn't seem like I've been pedaling very far or very long, but it seems like I came a long way. So that encourages me, okay, I'll be there really soon. Let me just keep pedaling. Before you know it, you're at the top of the hill, and then you're going down 50 miles an hour down a hill, and then that's the sweet spot. You just let that wind blows through your sweaty hair. Well, I don't have hair, but sweaty
well, you do on your chin.
On my chinny chin chin. Yeah. So one day, I remember just after I went to a stroke support group, and you know, I found a card in my pocket. I don't even know how it got there, who gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone must have given it to me when I was living in the hospital for 6 weeks. You know,
right.
After I went home, and they let me sleep in the bed next to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was inviting me to a caregiver support group, and I didn't even know what a caregiver was. Somebody had to tell me what a caregiver was.
People don't identify as caregivers until somebody tells them, oh, you're a caregiver.
And then I figured, well, if somebody gave this to me, I don't know who did it, they must think that I needed it, so I better go, because I wasn't in a good place. So I went, and I met people just like me, burned out caregivers, who needed support, who thought they were the only one in the world who was going through what they were going through. And it was great hearing the stories and you know, the things I can relate to. And you know, I learned that how you need to take care of you first. You can't take care of your loved one, how put on your oxygen mask on first and all that stuff. And so it changed me. I came back home, and I no longer cared about how my wife made me feel. I just took care of me.
Yeah.
I'm totally selfish here, so that I can take care of her. And it was just a survival, one day at a time, you know, like the alcoholics.
Right.
One day at a time, just get through today, you know, or if you're mm-hmm. quitting cigarettes, you just
live in
just
the
stop
moment.
Smoking today.
Live in the moment.
And before you know it, she started coming around and started becoming her old self again and didn't even notice that 2 years had passed. Oh, my gosh. And our love was rekindled again, and she started to do the things she used to do, like, you know, put on dinner parties for 8 people or redecorate the house because she's an interior decorator. And just it was nice to see her start cooking gourmet meals again. That was really nice.
I bet.
That's why I married her, because she entered my heart through my stomach. First meal was an 8-course meal of stuffed Cornish game hens and stuffed mushrooms and stuffed dessert with something. I don't know what it was. But it worked. And that was 44 years ago.
Wow. See?
And we're still in love, and we still travel. And that's why we travel a lot, because she's 74 and she's in a power chair and she can still travel, and I can
right.
still travel. Last year I couldn't travel because I needed back surgery that I never got, because I got healed somehow. Thank
you. Don't,
God.
You don't want back surgery.
No. So, you know, a friend of mine told me, live your life as if it was the last year of your life, right? If you knew you only had 1 year to live, would you act differently?
What would you do with it?
Yeah. You know, we all have bucket lists.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's great that I'm traveling the country, maybe the world, who knows. I just met a guy at Harvard who mm-hmm. does speaking events in Asia. And I said, wouldn't that be nice to go speak to Asian caregivers, you know? It's a little scary because it's so far away and it's a different country and culture and language.
It's a different culture. Caregiving there is a much more accepted and natural family phenomenon. You know, it's part of, you know, like how you treat your elders, the respect
right.
and all of that. But it's very different over there.
Yeah.
That's not to say that some of these people don't feel burnt out.
Right. So somehow, and I don't know exactly when it happened, but I just remember learning from everything from the caregiver support group and from Charlene taking care of her, that I realized, ding, light went on in my head, that there are other caregivers out there
mm-hmm.
just like me. And they, you know, I didn't want them to go through the pain and the suffering that I went through. Because I made every mistake in the book. And I figured, well, if I could just teach them not to do what I did, right? Because we're like drafted in this thing. It's not on our resume. We weren't prepared. They didn't teach me in school in home economics how to be a caregiver, which they should. And it's like, oh, my gosh. If I just had somebody – teach me what they know and approach me, because, you know, it's like you don't go looking for anything because you think you're the only one that it's happened to, that I could help other people. And so I didn't want them to give up like I almost gave up. I didn't want them to leave their wife like I almost left my wife, you know?
Right.
And so I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I joined this mastermind group. They helped me come up with my brand. They helped me by telling me how to write a book in 30 days, and I did.
Mm.
Wrote my story. Another 30 days to edit it, another 30 days to publish it. So in 90 days, I had my book. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then they told me that I should have a radio show, you know, because every expert needs a radio show. It builds credibility. So I've been doing this for almost 5 years now, and you came on board maybe 3 years ago, maybe. I don't remember.
Yeah, because I went to California. It was 2 full years and more, and I was doing the show for a while before. Yeah, 2.5, 3 years.
Yeah, because there was Regis and what's her name? He's had so many.
Kathy Lee.
And I said, we can be like a Regis and Kathy
Kelly.
Lee here, you know. And so I like it. It's just, you know, I'm spit, you're polish, you know. Or Mutt and Jeff or something. So I wrote my second book about the gas station. I wrote my third book about two caregivers. The first one was just memoirs. And then I started speaking, and then I started going on television, and I've been on 26 shows so far, and spoke at Harvard twice, and NASDAQ, and now I'm going to be speaking at, just set it up while I was away, at West Point, Coca-Cola,
wow.
And Mercedes-Benz.
Wow.
And so I'm getting around. I'm going to Hawaii in about a month, and I'm speaking in 7 different venues. So I'm impressed with myself,
boy.
Because it takes a lot to impress me. And you know, part of me is still that 12-year-old who has an inferiority complex, who still can't believe that I'm good enough, that people want to hear me. Or, you know, there's always a battle in your head, no matter how successful you are. They call it the fear of failure and the fear of success, because it's like,
absolutely,
you know, and very successful people worry about their success, or if their success is going to end, or people are going to find out that they've been faking it, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever insecurities are going on in your head. And so I'm just grateful that, and I just live one day at a time. I try not to let it go to my head. My friend spoke to Mike Tyson,
mm-hmm.
who's had his share of problems, you know, biting off someone's ear. And but he says, what is the greatest lesson that you've learned in life? And you know what his answer was? Be humble. Be humble. And so I think that's great advice. No matter how famous you are, or what mm-hmm. big a celebrity you are, if you're just humble, people will continue to like you. You won't start believing your own hype, you know. And I
unless
just
you're Muhammad Ali. And
it seemed to work for him. I don't know.
Well, it's I Am the Greatest and all of his other stuff. And then he became this amazing, humble human being.
Yeah, that wasn't the real him. That was just a show. And it
that,
was a great
exactly.
publicity stunt.
Entertainment.
And the people who know him said he was just a real humble guy, you know. So it's time for another break. So let us take another break. So don't go away. This one kind of snuck up on me. Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his 6th book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere and at caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and me, Dave Nassani. I got another question.
I just wanted to show you something. I can't.
Oh,
there's a picture I was looking for that I can't find. But this is Stephen Muhammad Ali.
Oh my!
And it happened on my 50th birthday. Steve and I had long wanted to meet him, and my cousin worked at Caesar's Palace in the boxing division, and she was friendly with Howard Bingham, who was Muhammad Ali's best friend. And it turned out that he was in New York on my 50th birthday.
Oh.
And my cousin asked, can we come up and see him? And we went up to his hotel room and we sat with him and met him and Lonnie, and it was wonderful.
Was that before his Parkinson's kind of developed?
Well, it was before his Parkinson's. No, he was pretty.
I could tell by the picture. He looked like it was on him.
Yeah.
You and I have something in common, Adrian.
What?
I also met Muhammad Ali.
You did.
In a restaurant in Los Angeles. It was called the Marrakesh. It was Moroccan, where you kind of eat on the floor and pillows and stuff like that. And so I remember going to the restroom, and who was there in the restroom washing their hands? Muhammad Ali. And I says, "Oh my God." He had his entourage around him, of course.
And, he was a real person, though. He was lovely.
That was around the time he was doing those Raid commercials, you know, and when his Parkinson's just started to come in, everyone said, what's the matter with him? You know, did he get punched in the head too many times? And I remember he used to say, Raid kills Bugs dead. Well, so was it hard for you to learn how to put your needs first? When did you first realize, or was it just easy for you? Were you always the kind of person who you know, just knew that it was important, that if you didn't take care of you, you wouldn't take care of anybody else?
I've said many times that, you know, I'm just a natural born caregiver. And when I say that, I mean that it was in my nature to do it, but I could do it because I sort of knew how to take care of myself while I was doing it.
That came naturally.
It just came naturally.
Lucky you.
And I mean, yes, I was very lucky. And I was also lucky that I learned how to voice my needs, because you might know you need to take care of yourself, but you've got to do it. You can't just know you should be doing it. So I learned to set my boundaries and do the things that I needed to do for myself. And yes, there were many times that I had to put Steve's needs or Sylvia's needs first, because, you know, I mean, if you're having an MRI on a certain day, well, I can't make an appointment on that day. But those were things that were on the calendar, just the same as any meeting was. So,
but as healthy as your habits were, there was a time that maybe it was a bad day and you were experiencing some symptoms of burnout because maybe it wasn't working out. Yes?
I don't think that I ever really had that kind of a bad day. I think that I took care of myself. It was like when I started to take care of both Steve and Sylvia, more than taking care of them, it was their relationship, the mother-son relationship, the Jewish mother-son relationship, that was wearing on me. Not the illness, not the caregiving, but that was my breaking point.
Yes, that is a special bond, isn't it? The Jewish mother and the Jewish son.
It is. Now, so that's
what do they call that? Because I know Japs are Jewish American princesses. So is there a name for the son?
Jap, Jewish American prince.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
That's funny.
Or mama's boy. Yeah, but
even you know, daddy's little girl, mama's boy. It's like opposite like that.
Right.
The girl always gets more from her dad, and the boy always gets more from his mom. It's like the magnets, you know, the same polarization.
They
just repel each other.
Yeah.
But the others just come together.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it was never. See, I started caregiving. The first time was with my grandmother. I guess the very first time was when I would stay with her weekends, and she would get migraine headaches, and I would have to take care of her and slice cucumbers and potatoes for her to put on her head. And I mean, she was from Romania and had all
on
these.
On her head? What do you mean?
On her head, instead of a cloth or an ice pack, she put potatoes on her head. She
and
felt,
how about
she believed that was that the potatoes at what you could watch the potatoes turning black over time, and that was like sucking the headache out of her.
Oh.
And you learn to be patient, and then the first time she was hospitalized with heart failure, and I was about 11. My mother was tired of going to the hospital, so she sent me. It's all the way from Manhattan to the Bronx on the subway. Wow. And I walked into the room, and my grandmother was the only person in the room. She was in isolation, and she had an oxygen tent. Now, I had never seen an oxygen tent, and at 11, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
So I started to get used to going to the hospital because my mother was tired of going to the hospital. And I became my grandmother's caregiver for a while. Then yeah,
you bring up a good topic. There are so many children who are caregivers.
Absolutely.
1.6 million at the last count. Those are just the ones we know about.
We know about.
There are a lot that don't, you know, they don't advertise it because they're kind of ashamed to admit that they're making their children do that.
One of the most robust groups we have on the website is the Young Caregiver Group.
Mm. And are we talking like ages 8 to 18?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Same stresses as adults.
They take care of their brothers and sisters. Sometimes they have to, you know, they come home from school and the aide leaves and the kid is responsible for the parent or whatever.
Many times they're robbed of their childhood. They can't go out and play.
Exactly.
They don't have friends.
Yep.
And the Labor Department doesn't fine you for overworking them or not giving them a break every or a lunch hour.
Yeah, no, kids are and even just brothers and sisters of children who are disabled in any way. The children learn to they have to adapt. And it's all very interesting to see how they do it, and it comes very naturally, but it wears on them the same way it wears on us.
It's hard to believe that an hour has gone by.
Just
goes so quickly. So why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you and what the caregiver space can do for them?
Well, what the caregiver space can do for them is give them a place to find other caregivers and share their experiences and ask questions and read articles, contribute on the blog. There's lots of different things.
Caregivers that are similar in age and situation.
Similar in age and situation. The after caregiving community, the spousal caregiving community. I mean, we've really got some very vibrant groups.
For you, that's not easy to do.
No.
Corey's been
Corey's
hard at work
amazing.
Doing that.
I think I've said Corey's amazing quite a few times. and she is.
And she must have a caregiver heart, too.
She does.
Is she a caregiver?
She knows how to be a caregiver. She
hasn't had that opportunity yet, but it's coming.
She does it part-time when she goes to visit. I mean, she doesn't live in the family unit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when she's needed, she'll go home. Or, I'm sorry. I didn't turn the phone on.
Well, on that note, will tell you.
Anyway, to get in touch with me, Adrienne, Adriennne, at thecaregiverspace.org.
That'll do it. And
yep.
I am caregiverdave.com. And go there and watch my welcome video, and it will help you get plugged in to caregiving. And we have two free gifts for you. One is my first book about overcoming unbelievable hardships. And the other is a welcome pack I put together that will help you to get on track and stay on track. And if you're already off track, it'll help you get you back on track. So caregiverdave.com, and if you forget that, just remember to Google caregiver and Dave, because I'm a caregiver and I'm Dave.
Yeah.
So, thank
and I'm
you
caregiving
again.
Caregivers.
Yes, I'm the caregiver's caregiver. So thank you for tuning in, and Adrienne, we'll see you next week.
Yep.
And goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.